Good morning. It is a Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon, which has been moved to a Wednesday afternoon because I was flying all day yesterday. I was in Ottawa flying Laugh Lounge, the excellent comedy club in the market. Check it out if you're from Ottawa. I'm now in Halifax. I got shows all week here in Nova Scotia. So I am on Atlantic time. Adam's on Mountain Time, so we had to do some real math here to
Are
figure
you
out.
on one of those half time zones?
No, I'm not a half timer. No,
Okay.
sir. That's Newfoundland only.
All right. So we don't have to worry about a cuckoo clock going off in a minute then.
No.
Okay, good. Thank God.
9 o'clock. 9 o'clock Atlantic. 9:30 Newfoundland and
All
Labrador. Not that. No.
right.
Okay, so this is what we do every single week. We comb through your interaction. And we released some videos that had plenty of interaction. I know Adam has already come out and said, listen, we'll touch on Votto quickly, but he doesn't want to get into it. The whole public thing, it's just if he already explained himself on Patreon.
Oh, okay, I
Old
will say
Patreon.
this. If you want to hear more thoughts on Joey Votto, we spent probably half hour
Yeah.
going back and forth on Joey Votto, pretty passionately on Patreon for the pre-show today. So Patreon got their money's worth today, I think.
That's right. $4 a month. You get into the Discord. You get MLB Mondays every single week. Little extra content. And then on top of it, if you join one of the upper tiers, you get merch and swag. And of course, we
And once the
appreciate
season starts again, we are going to be doing our watch parties on Zoom as well. So
Yes, we will.
it's a
Absolutely.
pretty fun interactive thing. So couldn't bring myself to set one up for the spring training games. Just couldn't do it. I know we did have a couple of requests. Mish was blowing up our inbox saying, are we going to watch a? I'm like, no. Sorry. I just can't. Just can't give a shit about this baseball.
Oh, and
Sorry.
it's so funny because I still every day I turn it on, I'm excited, and by the third inning, I'm like, oh, just give me real baseball. But we're
Yeah.
getting there, folks. We're getting close. We're 2.5 weeks away. Very, very close. To get a hold of us, you can always DM us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast. You can shoot us a message on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. We always comb through the Discord or the Patreon. You get that automatic bump if you're a Patreon member and send us a message. It is an automatic mailbag comment. And then, of course, we go through our YouTube comments and pick what we can. If by the way, you really want a mailbag and you haven't yet, just keep trying. DMing me is always the best way on Twitter. Because it does, it's always fresh on the mind, right? I don't have to hunt for it. Anyways, let's get going. After all of the preamble of this intro, let's get into it.
Let's get into it. Okay, so we'll start with Joey Votto here. Jenna
Yeah.
messaged us on Twitter and says, "Hey guys, love the show. I was hoping to get this on the mailbag. Joey Votto signing is really cool, but this has to be disappointing for some of these Buffalo guys. Who do you think in the system does this affect the most?"
You know what's funny, Adam, is that we haven't addressed this already. Like, what a great question, too, because think about the guys in that clubhouse who were excited, probably the majority of them. But if you were a guy who is on the verge of making this team, and let's say you play first base, let's say you're a lefty bat. Spencer Horowitz, like after kind of combing through the Buffalo
Depth charts.
Bisons depth charts, there is no doubt in my mind Spencer Horowitz is the guy who takes the biggest hit when it comes to Joey Votto signing with the Blue Jays because he is major league ready. He's pretty much proven himself in Buffalo, 26 years old. He has been on the show numerous times, made his major league debut last year. 39 plate appearances. In 39 plate appearances, he put up almost half of a point of WAR. So, like, he, you know, like half a game wins above replacement. Pretty impressive for a dude who played something like 15 games. He came up and performed admirably when Vladdy was dealing with some injuries. He came up and performed admirably while Belt was dealing with some injuries. And he is. So far past what developing in Buffalo can do, I think, at this point. He was really a dude that was on the bubble, and maybe even a guy who was shopped a little bit by the Jays, where they're just like, where does this guy fit? Maybe he doesn't. So if I'm Spencer Horowitz, I'm probably pretty disappointed. Yeah, of course, ball players keep their mouth shut, and this is all part of the game. And does Spencer Horowitz begrudge him? I'm sure he doesn't. I mean, a 21-year veteran, you probably should get a little leeway. But yeah, if I'm picking one guy, Spencer Horowitz is probably the dude.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely the name of someone who is most affected. I guess my next question to that would be, what does this say about the Blue Jays, I don't know, valuation of him? That they brought in guys like Vogelbach, Joey Votto? Like, does this say we don't have confidence in him to be our backup first base depth / DH? Or
personally, Adam, I don't view it that way. I think what the truth is about Spencer Horowitz is he's not the type of player that fills the need the Blue Jays had. Horowitz is a hits for average, makes contact, gets on base type of guy. He's not a power hitter. He's never put up home run numbers. And if you looked at the biggest weaknesses on this Blue Jays team going into 2024, it was pretty obvious. They needed a cleanup hitter. They needed a guy who could hit some bombs. Vogelbach really fits that area, or that area of need, a lot better than Spencer Horowitz did. I mean, Vogelbach's another guy that for sure, when they signed Joey Votto, he had to have been like, good Lord, I'm having such a good spring. This is the worst. Like, because it really does, you know, that bench bat, first base here and there guy, like, that's who Joey Votto's position is going to be. And so these are the guys who are going to be affected by it. I mean, the truth is, though, man, look at the Yankees. Look at the injuries that they're running into right now. They looked like the powerhouse of the AL East. And now, I mean, Gerrit Cole just had an MRI. Aaron Judge is struggling with health again. Carlos Rodon, Rodon, like, you're just
stinking.
Like, you're like,
Cortez
is
stinking.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
I don't know, man. You never know with injuries and having too much, you know, like the old adage is things tend to work themselves out.
Okay, so here's my other question then. Does Joey Votto stick around in AAA? Like, do you think he's really committed to playing it out in Buffalo at the end of his career and just waiting? Or how does this play out for Joey Votto? Do you think he ever plays a major league game for the Blue Jays?
Yes.
If it's not this year, never, right? So do you think he suits up this year for the Jays?
Yes, I do.
I don't know if he does or not. We'll have to see how he's hitting. I mean, I think he's making his Grapefruit League debut on Sunday. Not that spring training stats mean much, but we'll be able to tell if he can hit major league pitching.
So I think this is how it plays out with Votto. I think that he is going to be given some runway these last 2.5 weeks before spring training. I think he's automatically going to be assigned to Buffalo, and he's probably going to give it a solid 4 weeks in Buffalo and see where he's at. I think this is all going to come down to where Votto's confidence is in himself and where he thinks, if he's in Buffalo and he's tearing it up and he just doesn't get a chance to come up, he'll probably bail and sign somewhere else, right? Like, if he's showing that he's a productive bat still and he can't find a way onto this Blue Jays lineup, I think he's gone. Yeah. I think that if he can't hit, he retires.
Yeah, fair enough. So, you think May 1st, he's either
on he's the either Blue a Toronto Jays, Blue Jay,
or he's somewhere else in the bigs, or he's retired. So
truly, that's and listen,
so
man,
you say, okay,
I could
hold
be
on,
wrong.
Let me just, as clear as I could say this, May 1st, do not buy a ticket to a Buffalo Bison game expecting to see Joey Votto.
I would say not. I like that's my
I think that's
belief
fair.
Anyway.
I think that's fair. Maybe not May 5th, May 15th, whatever. But I do agree.
Yeah.
There is a a certain point in early ball season where he goes, release me so I can go somewhere else, or I'm hanging it up because I don't got it anymore, or he does got it and the Jays are like, yeah, come on up.
I truly do believe the lines of communication with Joey Votto between him and the front office are going to be far more open, and they're going to be far more communicative than, let's say, the front office with Addison Barger or Aroldis Martinez or whatever, right? Like, I don't think Spencer Hoare. Yeah, exactly. He's an established guy. They're going to keep him apprised to where they're at and what they're thinking. I don't think the Jays are going to string Joey along, being like, we'll call you up at some point and see Joey in the minors in June. I don't think so.
Joey Votto for next manager of the Blue Jays?
That's Stubby Clapp's job. Stop taking Stubby Clapp's job away from him.
All right.
I mean, if there's going to be a Canadian guy at the helm of this club, Stubby's
is Joey Votto Canadian? Oh, yeah, Stubby. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Stubby Clapp. Canadian through and through. Got it. All right, I'm over it. Let's move on.
Okay.
Vogelbach as a, what are we calling him? Power bat? Is that what we're calling him? So he had 13 home runs last season for the Mets in 104 games. Mm-hmm. So that's like a 20-ish home run pace with a .233 batting average. Not his best season.
Also, just it wasn't his best season. And just to put a little perspective on it, too, he was very much a bench bat. So even though there's 104 games with his name on the lineup card, he did not take full 104 games at bats.
Sure. 319 plate appearances. So let's project that to be a 600 plate appearance full season then. That's like 26 home run pace. But okay, fair enough.
Which would tie Vladdy for the most for the Blue Jays last year.
Right. So his career best, 2019,
Seattle,
as a 26-year-old, hit 30 home runs with a .208 batting average. Let's just call this best case scenario. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
For a 31-year-old to hit 30 home runs, which is a career best as a 26-year-old in his prime, because before that it was 4 home runs in 37 games. With the Mariners, then the shortened 2020 season, he hit 6 home runs, 9 home runs playing part-time with the Brewers. So he's never really shown that 30 home run, we got to get this guy into the lineup ability at the plate other than 2019 as a 26-year-old. So 30 home runs and a .208 batting average for Mr. Vogelbach. Are you happy with that? Does that keep him on the team? Is that good enough? Like, we talked about Votto and where is he on May 1st. Is Vogelbach a Blue Jay for the whole season? Is that just a for sure thing? Or is he still like a guy trying to prove something and trying to take a spot away from Spencer Horowitz? Because
I think he's absolutely still a bubble guy. I think Vogelbach needs to continue to bang like he's showing in spring training to this point. I don't think that there is a placeholder with his name on it. You know, I think that he is very much expendable, and I think he might even make the team and then still be on the bubble for weeks to come as Joey Votto continues to progress in the minors. We'll see. Listen, the best thing Vogelbach could do is come out of spring hot, right? Like his job depends on him hitting home runs in the first 3 weeks of the season.
He's not hitting doubles.
That's so unfair. Yeah, he's not hitting doubles or triples.
Yeah, I mean, close your eyes, swing hard just in case you hit it. Maybe that's how the Blue Jays envision this, is through April, Vogelbach starts with the team. If Votto's blowing it up in AAA,
it's an easy switch.
You go, Vogelbach is the obvious guy who we're sending down. Unless Vladdy really struggles. We're not sending him down. All right. Okay, there you go. Some clarification on how this roster might shake out. From a couple of boneheads. Good question, Jenna. That was great. Robert on Twitter says, good morning, gentlemen. Hoping to get your opinions on the opening day starter. So we just talked about the batters and the order there. Is Gary Gossman going to be ready? If not Goss, who takes the ball on opening day?
So, listen, Kevin Gossman, he had shoulder fatigue. He had a side session on Tuesday and said he felt good afterwards. So this was yesterday he threw. Blue Jays are just going to see how he feels tomorrow. And if he's ready to throw another bullpen. I mean, the math doesn't look good for Gary Gauss starting this season. That's the truth of the matter.
Yep.
We're at 2.5 weeks out now. I know he came out last week and said he's going to be ready for opening day. But if he's not, he's not. This is a 162-game season, blah, 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 all that rhetoric, blah, blah, blah. Like, you want Kevin Gossman healthy, and you want him ready when he's ready. And if it's not going to be until the middle of April, well, guess what? Francis Bowden and Chad Dallas gets a, gets a start until he's ready.
Yeah.
As for opening day starter, I think if it's not Kevin Gossman, I think it's obviously Jose Berríos. I mean, Berríos is already, he pitched yesterday. He's sort of lined up for that first start of the year. He's hit 65 pitches yesterday, probably up to 75 next start and 85 next start, which lines him up for that 90 to 100 range going into the season, right where they want him to be. He has been an opening day starter before in Toronto and in Minnesota, and he's 29 years old. He's experienced, been there, done that. I think Berríos is the obvious decision there, and then Chris Bassitt comes in as your number two. And then you fit Kevin Gossman in once he's ready, which hopefully is only a week. You know, like, that's the thing. 3.5 weeks to 2.5 weeks, like, it's such a big gap. And so he just misses one start, no big deal. I didn't look at the schedule. There might even be an off date. You might not even need to pitch anyone there.
Yeah. I guess the biggest, I don't want to say concern, the biggest indicator will be, like, he's still got his pitch in spring training, though, right? Like, we want to see him pitching in spring training. We don't want to just get to April 1st and be like, all right, he hasn't pitched in a month, but now he's ready.
Like, he's you're going to need to build him up a bit. In fact, we might even see, knock on wood, but it's not impossible, Kevin Gossman's first start of the year is in Buffalo and then comes up, you know, because he's got to get his innings up.
Yep.
He's got to get his pitch count up. There's no way the Blue Jays are going to put Kevin Gossman out there where he's at around that 60 pitch limit and just let him pitch three innings. I don't think that's the way they wish to go about.
I don't think so either. Okay. Blue Jays start the season with 7 games in a row, by the way. So.
Okay. One little interesting piece of information here too. Arden Zwelling, friend of the show, tweeted out, Blue Jays were happy with Yariel Rodriguez's 2-inning live bullpen session on Tuesday. Yariel has had a little bit of a, I think they called it an impingement in his shoulder, right? He, you know, these guys, spring training, man.
Mm-hmm.
Little yep. Soreness and all that stuff comes into play, and you're trying to ease these guys into where they should be. So Yariel Rodriguez, the Blue Jays big signee of the offseason, $32 million, 5 years. Plan is to build Rodriguez up to 5 innings by the end of camp. So who knows, if they get Yariel up there, it might just be Yariel's start in that Kevin Gossman spot. Not to start the season, by the way. I just mean, like, you'd move, scale everyone up. Jose Berríos starts, everyone else under him. And then Yariel would take Kevin Gossman's spot in that number 5 game of the season until Kev's ready.
Okay, good question. Broadly speaking, how do you feel about this team? You still feeling good?
I don't know if I ever felt good
out there.
I don't know, dude. Honestly, I was talking with I'm actually a friend Patreon member here, good buddy of mine, Neil Rhodes's place.
Nice.
He's put up the Blue Jays symbol behind us here for podcasting purposes, he mentioned. So,
lovely.
But we were talking last night, having some beers, and one thing he said was, he's like, I can't remember a team where I felt like they could win 75 games and it wouldn't completely shock you. And they could win 95 games and it wouldn't completely shock you. But most likely it's somewhere in the middle. And hopefully that somewhere in the middle is closer to 90 than it is to 80. And I kind of feel that way too, man. Like, that's like, obviously the wheels have fallen off, the have fallen off, and we're dealing with some major injury problems if they win only not 75 games. But there is absolutely a pathway there, and you know what, there is absolutely a pathway to this team winning 95 games, some rebound years from some dudes, some surprise performances out of guys that maybe you didn't see coming, which happens on every team every single year. And most likely, this team is going to be a bubble team, wild card team that wins between 87 and 89 games. That's kind of my view of this team right now. Where are you at, man? Like, are you panicking?
All off season,
panic's
I've been
the
saying
wrong word,
it. For me, more than I care about wins and losses this year, care about Vladdy's performance, Bo's performance, individual performances. We got 2 years left with this group. Real decisions need to be made very soon. And another underwhelming, I don't know if disappointing is quite the right word, but underwhelming season out of Vlad. Like, I just don't know how you give him the kind of money he wants. And would
you
still
don't.
Probably get on the open market, right? So if we have an underwhelming season from Vlad, 25 to 30, like under 30 home runs, I just don't know how he's a Blue Jay in 2026. I don't. Is that crazy?
No, I don't know how he's a Blue Jay in 2025. They probably move him.
Well, that's the thing, is if he's not coming back. We talked real talks happening with them and Votto. That's got to be the thing, too. It's like, hey, if we can't sign him, that's the thing. Regardless of how this season plays out, even if he hits 50 home runs, we got to either sign him this offseason.
Or trade him.
Or trade him. We can't just take a fucking compensatory draft pick in return for him and Bo, both of them.
No.
Sorry, gone. I think.
Unacceptable. It would be malpractice this front office to just sit on these guys. They got to either sign them or move them.
So with that in mind, then Blue Jays announced their new slogan for this season. Did you see it?
No, I didn't.
So on Blue Jays Twitter, to the fans, to the city, to the nation, we are Blue Jays, hashtag to the core.
Yeah.
They had a little hype video come out. I hate this, by the way. I think it's
lame
for one and lame for two. So the hype video goes, at our core, who are we? The sum of our parts? We're more than that. There is nobody like us. The narrator in the video states, at our core, we are built to win. Relentless in our pursuit of greatness. Who are we? Blue Jays to the core. So lame for one, hate it for two. Number three is next year's hashtag moving on, hashtag rebuilding, hashtag Phoenix from the ashes, we will rebuild. Like, I do not like this slogan. Ugh.
Man, I sure hope the Blue Jays come out of the gate hot so we don't have to talk about this in fucking late April.
It would sure go a long way.
Oh my God, man. This is how the walk-off dies. We're just like mid-season. We're like, we're done. We can't.
we're
not rebuilding.
We're not, yeah. Oh, man.
I'm kidding, by the way, everybody.
This is a threat, Atkins. You either sign Bo long-term or we're ending the walk-off.
Yeah.
All right. Next, let's move to the Discord. Scott, it's Syrup Season Adams, posted the Keegan Matheson article. recently.
Which, by the way, our Discord is happening right now. So if you are a Patreon member and haven't signed up for the Discord, or you have not been back to the Discord all winter, because there's a lot of people coming out of hibernation right now, man, it is a buzz, and it is a buzz from 6 a.m. Atlantic time to midnight Pacific time, because there's just, so basically there's no window. You can't be talking baseball. It's a beautiful thing. Sorry, Adam, nice. Go ahead.
No, it's great. Great. So the Keegan Mathis, an article about Tim Mayza called Why the Blue Jays Think Teammate Needs a Full Makeover. Trans Am with cigarette hanging out of his mouth, pulling up to the field with a neck tattoo. The whole article is just Mays's teammates taking the piss out of him, and Keegs reporting it like it's an important story.
It is awesome. I love it too. Much. And so I even thought about pulling some of the things out of the article, and I was like, honestly, we're just going to give Keegs.
Yeah,
we're just going to give Keegs a shout out here. Really well-written article, incredibly funny. And I think Scott Adams puts it just perfectly there when he's like, this is an entire article of his teammates ripping on him, and Keegs writing it all out like this is very serious business.
That's and great.
It's very funny. So check it out. Friend of the show, Keegan Mathison, MLB.com writer, Blue Jays insider. Great article. Why the Blue Jays Think Teammates Need a Full Makeover. So give it a read.
All right, sticking with Discord then. Sentimental Hygiene says the Yankees traded basically all of their pitching depth for Soto and then lose Cole for the year, possibly. Rodon has been awful again. Nestor Cortez has an 8 ERA so far, and Judge is battling injuries. That deal will end up looking very bad, especially if the Padres get long-term value out of two of those guys. The Soto market always made me nervous.
Listen, there was a lot of risk to the Juan Soto trade. The Yankees really did push their chips in, which was the first time we've seen the New York Yankees do this sort of move in a while now. Listen, they've always been prepared to go out and spend big money. We saw it on Carlos Rodon. They've always gone out at the trade deadline and bolstered their rotation. We saw it with who's the guy here I'm thinking
you.
Of? You're not I'm helping me. I want to say, I want to say Sonny Gray, but who is the other? Anyways, it doesn't matter. We've seen them bolster their rotation and then it not work out because of injuries and stuff like that. The Yankees do tend to make moves when other teams might be more tentative, but he's right. Like, Sentimental Hygiene. And I know as Jays fans, you're not supposed to hope for injuries. You're not. And obviously no Jays fan out there is happy that Gerrit Cole may need Tommy John surgery. And believe me, I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I hope that his recovery goes well in 2024. If that's the case, maybe even it goes into 2025, however long Gerrit Cole is out, I hope that he is healthy and happy, until he returns to the field.
Look, what do we always say here? We say, I don't want to beat the Yankees because they're injured. I want to beat them because they're healthy and they suck.
Yes.
Unless they're better than us. Then I hope they're injured.
Then,
that we beat
then I
them.
Hope they're injured. Yes. Right. That old
I'll take the same. Old hashtag, we are Blue Jays to the core. Hashtag, I'll take what we can get.
just the tale as old as time. So, yeah, I mean, there's examples of this throughout baseball. This is the thing with injuries, right? Look at the Jared Kelenic trade with
the Braves,
right? Like the two top prospects, pitching prospects that the Braves sent to the Mariners. And this is the baseball gods just frowning and making it rain on you. But both of them need Tommy John surgery and are out until at least mid-2025. Like, and that's the thing with prospects, man. Like, if you get a Tommy John surgery and you haven't even cracked the big leagues yet, like, you don't know. Like, look at the amount of pitchers that you can name where injury has just been their downfall. Hell, we have one on this team right now in Nate Pearson. Remember when he was going to be a Hall of Famer only 3 years ago? Like,
lost his 300 batting average, and now he's out.
So I give the Yankees credit for pulling the trigger on that trade because Juan Soto is a huge difference maker, and they really were looking at the landscape and being like, without a doubt, this is the guy we can add that does the most to improve this team. And there's something to be said for a front office prepared to do that. But yeah, for this to just go sideways on them, you know, if Gerrit Cole, the ace of their staff, the ace of the American League, winds up being out for the whole season and Carlos Rodon doesn't rebound like they're hoping he does, and Nestor Cortes continues to struggle and doesn't show what we saw out of him in 2022, and you don't have Aaron Judge in the lineup protecting Juan Soto like you thought he'd be in the lineup, and Anthony Rizzo takes another elbow to the head in some freak accident, and all of a sudden his concussion problems are undiagnosed again by the crack medical squad of the Yankees. Like, literally, there's a lot of things that could go wrong here and go sideways, and to watch it start to happen in spring training, like, yeah, Yankees fans are losing their mind, and this is why there's rumors out there. Bob Nightingale just yesterday put out that the Yankees were restarting negotiations with the Chicago White Sox for Dylan Cease, right? All of a sudden, Blake Snell being like, I want to go to the Angels. Now he's shut up. You're not hearing anything out of Blake Snell now about where he wants to go. as they're going, circling back to the Yankees. You know, Scott Boras is right there, right? I mean, he's Juan Soto's agent, so he's like, hey, like.
Yeah, I think the two closest things I'll be watching this April will be hopefully watching Vlad come out strong. And then equally as important to me is that Juan Soto struggles. And I hope the Yankees boo the living snot out of him. And I hope he realizes this sucks.
New York's not for him.
New York, the fans are shitty. I don't want to be here for the next 10 years. This is
no
shitty. I want to be a Blue Jay, hashtag to the core, baby. I'm sorry. I'm trying to make this hashtag work. It's not working for me. All right. That's good stuff. Let's end with these last two here from the Discord. From the Patreon. Mark has a merch idea. Since we're getting all these mug requests, another idea should be pint glasses. I'd be happy I'd be happy to enjoy a cold one in a walk-off beer glass.
I mean, mugs and glasses, this is your wheelhouse, buddy, and we should figure this out because I know I mentioned it last show, but I get so many messages about those mugs, dude, like to a point where I'm like, this is annoying that we don't have mugs to sell. So
yeah, we could probably get that set up.
Yeah, we got to look into that. Absolutely.
I'll tell you what, I'll design the beer glass. You design the water bong.
Hashtag to the core.
Hashtag to the core. All right. It does have a question
not to
attached
the core. You're not to the core unless you live hardcore, right? Yes.
What is that, Wild Hogs?
No, that's Tenacious D.
Yeah. Tenacious D. By the way.
And the legend of the red was way hardcore. Yes.
By the way, your mention on the episode you did by yourself last week of Tenacious D's cover of that Britney Spears song.
Yeah.
I went and looked it up, and that was definitely worth looking up. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Just their beards blowing in the wind. I don't know what it is about a man's beard blowing in the wind, but I'm like, that's cool. That's just cool.
Yeah. Do you
to the core. Hashtag to the core.
Do you like the feeling of your beard blowing in the wind, or is yours not quite long enough?
Hate it. No, yeah. I can feel it. I don't like it. Okay. I prefer a nice tight.
I don't like it either. But you know what I love is when I'm in a pool and I can feel it in the water getting tugged.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
me
like
too.
Wading
me too.
Back and forth in the water. I'm like, oh, yeah. I get right in my vibe when I'm feeling that. So, yeah. My daughter's like, what are you doing, Dad?
You're like,
shh. I'm having a moment. Don't have a moment at a public pool. Okay. Mark's question was, why is the pitching distance 60 feet, 6 inches? Where'd the extra 6 inches come from? Base paths are 90 feet. So I could see someone being like, oh yeah, let's throw from 2/3 of that. And then there was just one guy that was like, nope, too close. Back it up just a little bit. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
What's the history of 60 feet, 6 inches?
Well, I think they were going to make it 60 feet. And then who is the guy? Average size Allen was like, well, let's just add whatever length my dick is. And then it was just 60 feet, 6 inches. All right. Sorry, guys. We'll cut that. I have no idea, actually, as to the reasoning behind it. It is a game of inches, though, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, this is a great piece of homework. I'm on the history of the pitcher's mound .com. 1845, the rules regarding the area for a pitcher to throw were very limited. In fact, the only regulation was that they had to stand 45 feet from home base. At that time, baseball was truly considered a batter's game, and pitchers were not viewed as very important to the team's success. 1864, complaints led to more rules for the pitcher's mound. Many said pitchers were cheating to make the ball unhittable. Therefore, a 3-foot by 12-foot pitcher's box was established where the pitcher had to remain while they pitched. Pitchers were also now required to have both feet on the floor while pitching, without running or just throwing the ball as fast as possible. During this time, the pitching box was moved to 50 feet from the home plate, 5 further than before. Yeah, in 1893... following a pattern of early modern baseball, switching between pitcher and batter dominated, more rules were established to redistribute a balance between pitcher and hitter. So 1893, in order to increase movement and aid the pitcher, the previous pitching box was replaced by a mound with a slab on top. The new raised pitching position was increased to 60 feet, 6 inches. So that might just be... I have to do the math on that quick. 50 feet. Maybe that was like the midpoint of where their old box was, but it doesn't have a reason as to why it was 60 feet, 6 inches. Just that 1893, they made a mound.
Do they have in there when they raised the mound up? When was that? The '60s?
Yes. 1968. Was known as the year of the pitcher, mainly because the number of runs had dropped, blah, blah, blah. MLB. Let's get that correct before the comment trolls come out. Changed the height requirement for the pitching mound to 10 inches.
Right.
To this day, height and distance of the pitcher's mound have not changed, establishing the perfect ratio of runs per game to maintain the thrill and entertainment of the audience. Ooh, this must be an old article. anyways, there you go. So it doesn't have a why 60 feet, 6 inches was selected. I don't know. It probably just visually looked like a good spot on the mound. And then they measured it after the fact, I bet. You know, a lot of that stuff happens where they're just like, here's where we pitch from. And then someone was like, well, we should measure it. So everybody pitches from there. And then they're like, okay, measure it. And it was like, turned out to be 60 foot, 6 inches. I'm just guessing. I don't know. Anyways, if you in the comment section know why it is 60 feet, 6 inches, let us know. Or better yet, if you don't know, do the homework.
Make it
find
up.
Find out.
Yeah.
I was going to say find out and then let us know. But yeah, make it up. We will also, for next week's mailbag, read all the best reasons why it's 60 feet, 6 inches, made up or otherwise. Well,
made up or otherwise, we'll put it out there like this is 100%.
We'll do a Keegan Matheson article on it.
Yeah.
We'll report on it like it's very serious.
Yeah.
Okay, last one here. Let's get out of here. From Wyatt says, hey, fellas, question for the mailbag. John Heyman reported that J.D. Davis would be a good fit for the Jays after he was placed on waivers from the Giants at $6.9 million for his last year of arbitration. My question is, after looking at his stats, why would San Francisco sign Chapman to a potential one-year deal and give up a draft pick when they already had a third baseman for one more year at $13 million less than what they ended up paying Matt Chapman?
I mean, the easy answer is the Giants organization did their homework and felt that the Matt Chapman at third base was worth $13 million more and better for the team. I mean, you look at J.D. Davis and all this talk of him coming to the Blue Jays, and I don't know if he's better than the options they already have vying for the spot. And this is one thing I was going to ask you, Adam. Like, when you take a look at his numbers, right, he had a wins above replacement just under one last year. He had just under 500 at-bats, 119 hits, a batting average of just under 250, 18 home runs. Like, pretty comparable numbers to Matt Chapman, outside of Matt Chapman being worth 2.5 more wins above replacement than he was because of the value he adds defensively. I don't know, man. Would you, honest opinion, just when you first hear it, the Jays go out and sign J.D. Davis, does that make you happy at all?
Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Like,
I'd rather them give Ernie Clement a shot, in all honesty. The kid is absolutely lighting it up right now. He's got no option. So if he doesn't make the team, he's going to be sent. He's going to hit waivers pretty much, and someone's going to claim him. In fact, I read an article from Ben Nicholson Smith where he was talking about the fact that he had just talked to some scouts from other organizations who mentioned Ernie Clement. This is a 27-year-old guy who's been around the league for a little while now, had a really good stretch with the Jays last year. Between him and Horowitz and Schneider, they basically saved the Blue Jays season there in August when there were injuries going on. So I look at Ernie Clement and Davis Schneider and where these guys are just on the bubble and might need to go back to AAA. And I'm like, is J.D. Davis an upgrade over these guys? If so, it's marginal, man.
Yeah, I don't know. It's it doesn't excite me at all. First place I heard about the Jays being after him was Jays Digest, actually, on YouTube. And they were pretty keen on the idea. So I was like, I didn't know much about J.D. Davis, so I thought, oh, that's interesting. I still don't feel like, just on the premise of it of, hey, we're all disappointed in Matt Chapman, so let's get the guy who another team thought was worse than Matt Chapman and didn't want anymore. That alone is enough reason for me to like not like it, just as an idea. Offensively, his numbers aren't like good. They're not bad.
Not bad. He's just an average everyday guy. And I think there's plenty of that with maybe more upside already in the Jay system. I don't know. Grounds crew, speak up here. Like, leave a comment because I'd love to hear what you folks think.
The best thing I can say about J.D. Davis. So in 2019, coincidentally, the best season of Vogelbach was also the best season of J.D. Davis. Was that the juice ball season?
It was the juice ball season, actually. It literally was the juice ball season. Funny. But anyways.
That's funny. So he hit 307 that year with 22 home runs. That might have also been Matt Chapman's best season. Let me just double check this. Matt Chapman in 2019 had numbers that looked like 6th in MVP votes, 249 batting average, 36 home runs. So, yeah, 2019, almost more of an anomaly than 2020 was.
Give those balls a little juice, yes.
You know, like
you're gonna see guys like Vogelbach and Chapman being like, "We love juice balls."
I gotta just start looking at 2019 as a write-off. Like when I'm looking at people's career numbers, I already look at 2020 as like that doesn't really count.
Yeah.
Like if they had an OPS of 1,000 that season, and every other season was like 785.
Like, I'm yeah, like, okay, would have you been 785 by the end of this thing?
Yeah, I'm exactly. Like, he played 60 games. He had 2 good months. Okay. But I think I need to start looking at 2019 with the same kind of a. Yeah, Matt Chapman hit 36 bombs in 2019. But so did like everybody. You know, that was not. I don't know. I genuinely think I got to start calibrating my interpretation of what 2019 looks like on a guy's baseball card. Anyways, JD Davis had a good 2019. Otherwise, the second half of 2022, the numbers were also pretty good when he got traded from the Mets to the Giants. 49 games, 8 home runs, an OPS of 857. So an OPS plus of 142 jumps off at you as like, oh, wow, that's pretty good. That's like Joey Votto's career OPS. Anyways, it's good, but again, it's only 49 games. And then when you look at like, well, how big of a sample size is 49 games? Matt Chapman's first 49 games last season, he hit 301 with an OPS of 895. That's like exactly the point is that,
yeah,
you can be really good for a month and a half.
Yeah.
So, yeah, JD Davis.
Most big leaguers are in the big leagues because they can string together 5 good weeks.
Yeah, well, if they can't, they get cut, right? They get sent back down. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, JD Davis does not do it for me at all. And I think you make a great point. Give me a guy like Ernie Clement to just run out there for essentially, maybe he's not as good as JD Davis, but like, let's find out.
But and again, if he's not, I feel like it's marginal, right? Like
I don't see JD Davis signing with the Yankees, putting up a 35 home run season, and we're sitting there with Ernie Clement going, "Oh, if only we had gotten JD Davis."
I was just gonna say that. I'm like, what kind of organization is this, and how deep are we in the mud if we're looking at each other in June and we're just like, "Dear God, what we would give for JD Davis?" Like, man, things are not good.
I know. Give me back Paul DeYoung and JD Davis.
Grounds crew would love to hear your thoughts on adding JD Davis, where you folks are at on that. And if we're missing something on the positive side, where maybe JD would offer an aspect and fill a hole for the Blue Jays that they desperately need filled that we just missed. Always appreciate all the interaction, folks, and just you folks in general. Honestly, I did shows in Ottawa, and I had almost a full dozen different people come up to me afterwards who are listeners of the walk-off and said very nice things, Adam. I had 2 different people. I mentioned this to you on MLB Mondays, but we'll get it out there to the public. People miss your mullet. I know your wife doesn't, but people miss your mullet.
I might do mustache for April 1st. Tell you what.
You've got that big, thick upper lip too, buddy. Like you grow such a badass mustache. Oh,
it comes in good. Here's the thing. Okay. My daughter is in playoffs for hockey right now. She's in the final game of their like round robin for playoffs. And her team is tied for not quite a spot in the semifinals. If they win on Thursday, so tomorrow, if they win by 4 goals, they're into the semifinals. If they win by 3 goals or less, or tie or lose, season's over. So
right.
I've been hammering her all week. I'm like, you've got to run up the score on this poor team that we're playing. Like, we've got to put the gears to them. Anything can happen. It's tier 6 hockey, right? Like, some kid doesn't get a good night's sleep, and all of a sudden, you're like, holy fuck, we're blowing the doors off the roof.
Kids are cranky and fighting on the bench. That's all good for Team Lily. Yes,
exactly. So if that's the case and we advance, I can't shave my beard off because it's playoff beard.
Of course.
Point.
Those are the rules.
If you see me on Friday with a mustache, it means we lost or we won by less than 4, unfortunately.
It's a post-mortem for your daughter's hockey team.
Can I say this? This is terrible. The last game we played on Sunday was against like the top team in our grouping. And we were down 5-2 and we ended up coming back and tying 7-7. So like if we had a loss, we would have been out of contention. Tomorrow's game wouldn't have mattered. So the tie was a big thing. But they had one kid on their team who was like their whole team, because that's usually what it is at tier six, is like everyone stinks. One kid knows how to stick handle and he just scores 12 goals a game, right?
Right.
Anyways, he was just like dangling through everybody and whatever. And I told her, because I'm in the score clock and her bench is right next to mine. I'm like, 1-5, like you've got to, this is their whole team. You've got to stop this kid. You can't keep letting them blow by you guys. Like you got to, you know, play the body a little bit. And anyways, there was a point in like the second period where he was cutting back basically across the blue line and she had him lined up so good. Like he probably would have been in the hospital if she had hit him. And he just got out of the way. I'm not saying like I wish she had hit him and wrecked his career or anything. Yeah, like that. But like
it sent a message.
It sent a message because he saw it. He had his head down because you have your head down when you're 12 and stick handling, right? And he like just looked up at the right second and just dodged it. But like she clipped him and he was not dangling through the team.
He was not the same the rest of the game.
And I was just like,
love it.
Could never public. Here I am publicly cheering this on. I'm glad she didn't hit him and that he wasn't hurt. Mm-hmm. And I would have had to like scold her a little bit for whatever, but like, I'm always on her. I'm like, don't slash kids. Like you can't be out there, break someone's wrist or their ankles. You can't do that. Yeah. I'm like good, like shoulder to shoulder, like rub them out against the boards. Right.
Yeah.
Like just,
yeah,
you don't want to hurt the kid, but you got to let them know like, hey, you're going to have to work for it. Right.
Yes.
And she just put a little bit of a fear of God in his eyes and he wasn't the same for the rest of the game. So a little bit of a proud dad moment. If that makes me a bad person, I'll own it. But I was like, hey, that's my girl. She went for it. So, I mean,
to the core,
it would have absolutely been a penalty because it's non-contact in this league, like whatever. So it would have been a body checking penalty. But it wasn't like a dirty, like elbow to the head or like from behind, like,
right.
You know, but
a gentle pick. Right?
Like exactly. So anyways, it's just, having kids is fun and watching them play sports is fun and I'm entertained by it. So,
well, I hope she wins, buddy. And if we see a mustache on you on Friday, we'll know that that's not the case.
If not, we're only one more week away. So anybody that wants to see that mustache, wait one more week regardless and it'll be here. Maybe. I still don't know if I'm going to do it, but we might. Okay.
And on that, we'll call it. Big tip of the hat, everyone. Thank you so much. Without you, the grounds crew, we would be just talking to Adam's dad and my dad and his brother and my brothers. So thank you. All the best, gang.
Patreon, stick around because, well, I mean, not stick around, but when you see this, we are going to have the second episode coming out later today, which is the baseball TV show episode. So you and I are sitting down with Joel in like 15 minutes for that. So anyways, if you're on Patreon and you finish watching this, keep an eye out for your notifications because a couple hours down the road, you'll have something else. So there you go. Okay, that's it. Let's get out of here. Cheers.
Cheers, gang.